facilitation is about being able to sort of be flexible, to have your outcomes close but not too close, to be able to prepare for any amount of different situations and feedback that you might get, to be able to weave what people in your workshop are telling you so that you can, you know, create that theme through the day, to create energy contrast. So it's high energy, low energy, reflection, use a ton of different mediums. It's not just speaking, it's through your design of activities, through the way that you open up, through the way that you get, you ask questions and listen. It's just three dimensional.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with you and with another episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast. I hope you've had a really fantastic week so far. I trust also that you enjoyed our most recent interviews with Jonathan Grzybowski of Penji and with Duncan Smith of ADC Associates. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast today as my guest, Leanne Hughes, who's also a podcaster. She's a facilitator and an MC and host of the First Time Facilitator podcast. Leanne has worked across industries, including mining, tourism, and vocational education and training, presenting leadership and development programs, onboarding initiatives, and presentation skills workshops. In her podcast, Leanne reveals all of her group facilitation, training, and workshop tips and tricks so you can be ahead of the curve the next time you step out in front of a group. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. Go check it out. It's free to join. And if you're a member already, just log in to get your resources. In our discussion today, Leanne talked to me about being focused on the workshop outcomes, keeping them close, but not too close. Managing energy, keeping it high, but at the same time providing a contrast. And why it's important to think always about the learner or about your audience. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Leanne Hughes. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Brisbane in Australia, Leanne Hughes of First Time Facilitator and also host of the podcast with the same name. Welcome to the podcast, Leanne. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest on the InnovaBuzz podcast.
Oh, Jürgen, thank you so much for the invite to be on your show. It's an absolute honour.
Now, Sean D'Souza, who was our guest on episode 179 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we speak with you and that we get you on the podcast. So big hello to Sean.
G'day, Sean. And actually, that was also an honour to be nominated by him. Sean's definitely one of my role models and someone I aspire to be. I love his lifestyle and the way that he markets. So that was really cool.
Mm. And we had a lot of fun talking to him and exploring his brain audit book. So, yeah, hello to Sean. Now, Leanne, you help people create what you call unpredictable workshop experiences that predictably work. And I'm thinking unpredictable in that context means exciting and delightful and all those kind of positive things. Now, as someone who runs workshops as well and always looking to create those kind of experiences, I'm really looking forward to exploring those topics some more today and digging deeper. But before we start talking about all things workshops and facilitation, tell us a little bit about your background. Give us a snapshot of how you got to where you are today and what some of the pivotal moments were in that journey.
Yeah, perfect. So as you said, what I'm currently doing now is that I facilitate sort of team-based and leadership workshops. And I also have a podcast of the same name called First Time Facilitator. What really drove that was I guess probably 10 years ago working in a marketing role, I was attending workshops and they were just, it was just theory thrown at us. There was no interaction. It was like going to university again. And I've always really had this passion for making the most out of your time. I sort of remember when I was young as a kid, I think as a five-year-old, I actually got back after a kid's birthday party. And I remember complaining to my parents about, you know, there were no activities at that party. And, you know, I just, as a five-year-old, so it's been sort of just stuck in me from then. And I guess the reason why I sort of love team development and group processes, and I'm fascinated by the way that people behave. I played netball at a very high level in Australia. I represented Papua New Guinea, where my mother is from. And I love the sport, but I think more so I loved just being around in a team environment and striving towards a goal. And I was in some really successful teams and I've always been interested in that. I played down the shooting end as well. So when I was 11, I was reading a book about netball for shooters, and it was really about how you visualize getting goals in, setting goals for the season, setting goals for every game, tracking your performance. And the great thing about having that developed as a young age was that it stood me in good stead for sort of what I'm doing now in the business world, in just running life, really. Having those practices of setting goals, visualizing, and working really well as part of a group. So those are kind of some pivotal moments. One moment that also sort of really strikes me was I did study human resources and psychology as a university, and I started a role for a consulting company working in instructional design. I did that for a year, and that was a job that wasn't client-facing. Basically, you were just given a brief to write training programs, and I worked for clients like the Australian Taxation Office and Telstra, where I interviewed subject matter experts and I had to write online content. And I didn't like that at all because there was no sort of interaction with humans. It was just getting onto a Word doc and writing some training. It gave me a really good foundation for what I'm doing now, but it bored the hell out of me. And I had a bit of a quarter-life crisis. So I don't know if you've had any other guests on the show that have talked about quarter-life crisis, but I was really wondering, you know, is this what I really want to do? And I ended up joining this company called Wicked Camper Vans. Jürgen, you might have seen them on the roads. You're from Victoria, aren't you?
Yeah. They're quite common around here.
Yeah, they're very crazy. They got a lot of very controversial quotes in the back of the camper. But I worked directly for the owner of that company. His name's John Webb, and he's probably the craziest person I've ever met, but he's very good at marketing. And my role there was as a wicked evangelist. But what he did also was he gave me these CDs to listen to. He's very into personal development. And he gave me Jim Rohn to listen to, and Jim's quote about working harder on yourself than you do on your job just changed everything for me, that quote. So those are sort of a few pivotal moments, from birthday parties to sports to working for a crazy boss.
Well, that's fascinating. I learned two new things about you that I hadn't discovered in my research. So that's wonderful. Netball goal shooter for PNG and working for Wicked Campers. So we'll have to include a link to Wicked Campers for the listener who might not be familiar with it if they're not from here.
Yes, it's funny when you Google them, because there's a ton of reports in the media, very controversial stories, so do check that out.
Yes, yeah. Basically, just to fill in a little bit of the blank, it's and you'll know this better than I will, so maybe you should do this, but it's essentially a low-priced, small camper van targeted at young people, young tourists.
Yeah, and I guess the interesting thing about that, particularly to your listeners, about how that company started was they just began. His wife was an artist. He was a mechanic. And they combined those two industries. She drew on the camper vans. He fixed up old vans. They started renting it out, and it just blew up with demand. So it was just testing out an idea.
Yeah. There's a lot to love about that. All right. Well, In terms of your work, what exactly is it that you do? So what makes up the components of your work, and what changes when somebody works with you? What changes for them?
Yeah, so as of probably 3 months ago, I've recently left corporate. So my most recent role was working for a global mining company in talent management and development. And really what I'm doing now is sort of an extension of what I was doing in that role. So in that role, I was facilitating leadership and team development programs for emerging leaders and mid-level managers. And I got the opportunity to run training in Canada, Mongolia, across Australia and Indonesia. And I loved it. But I also realized that I wanted to sort of spread my wings and get some more variety in terms of the type of company I was working with. So mining and it's a very high risk industry, so very compliance driven, very much a safety focus. And I wanted to sort of work with companies that had a different culture, that maybe were a bit more loose in their rules as well, just to get some exposure and for me to develop my game as a facilitator. So what I do now is I have my podcast, and I also run facilitation services from leannehughes.com. And I guess what people get from me is what you said in your intro. People don't come to me if they want a stock standard workshop delivered. If they want a leadership course, I'm not the person for you. I'm the person if you actually want to try something a bit different, take a few risks. You like being challenged with what you want your participants to learn, and you have the faith, hopefully. And that's tough to sort of to market is just trust me and you know, just trust me and we'll get the outcomes that you're driving, but it may not be the way that you like. That's why clients sort of seek me out, is for that unpredictability.
Mm. All right. So facilitation as opposed, facilitation, training, and presenting. So do you see those as different? And if so, how are they different?
Yes, I do. And the reason I started my podcast was because I didn't see anyone really talking about facilitation. There were a ton of podcasts out there on public speaking, which really dealt with a one-way conversation with about, you know, making sure that your slides are great, that you are prepared, that you're using your body language. But facilitation is a whole other game, because facilitation is about being able to sort of be flexible, to have your outcomes close but not too close, to be able to prepare for any amount of different situations and feedback that you might get, to be able to weave what people in your workshop are telling you so that you can, you know, create that theme through the day, to create energy contrast, so it's high energy, low energy, reflection, use a ton of different mediums. It's not just speaking, it's through your design of activities, through the way that you open up, through the way that you get you ask questions and listen. It's just three-dimensional. And the reason I guess I started the podcast was I was in Canada running a leadership course. This is when I was fairly new to facilitation, and on the second half of the day we ended up doing an activity which required people to come up to the front of the room and start presenting. And one of the senior supervisors in the program just decided he didn't want to participate. And I had to really quickly figure out how, because then the guy after him said, I'm not going to participate. And I was like, oh, well, what am I going to do now? Thankfully, I pulled it together, because we'd done a lot of sort of framing up at the beginning of the day about being out of your comfort zone. But I remember that night thinking, what could I have done in that situation? I lost a lot of sleep over it, thinking, what could I have done? And I thought, there needs to be a forum where we have this discussion, and facilitators share this with each other, and we learn from each other's experiences. So that's the main difference between the two. Presenting is pretty much, you know, you can get up there, deliver a keynote. It's one way. You can prepare to the nth degree and nail it. Facilitation is very different. You need to be flexible, agile, responsive to what's going on in the room.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really important point, being responsive to what's going on in the room. So, given that example you gave where the supervisor, and obviously once somebody in a senior role within the group takes that sort of approach, it kind of gives permission to everybody else to do the same, doesn't it? So how do you tackle that kind of situation? Because basically it's the ego's gotten in the way there, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And he was acting because he was very uncomfortable about stepping out in front of people because he probably wasn't confident in his ability to speak in public. And it was interesting following that workshop, his crew actually had the most safety incidents out of all the other crews because the next day we even did a topic on feedback and he refused to participate in that. So what I had done at the beginning of day one was talk about the ladder of learning. I'm not too sure if you might be familiar with that model. It's about the way that we learn and how to get to build up and go up the ladder. You need to go through stages, ouch moments, essentially. Mm-hmm. So when he refused and the next guy refused, I basically brought back that ladder of learning model and talked them through it again and said, look, we spoke about this, we agreed to this. And then I went back to the second guy and said, do you want to give this a go? Do you want to go through an ouch moment? We're here to support you. And he did. So thankfully that came onto track. What I didn't do, being an amateur facilitator at that stage, what I should have done also in that moment is possibly after that activity gone to a break and pulled the supervisor aside and had a chat to him. Because what that would have signified to the group is that I was tackling it, but I was doing it in a private manner that wasn't, you know, sort of derailing this guy in front of his peers, but, you know, stepping him aside, just going, look, what's going on, and just having a chat. So knowing that, that's why in hindsight, I would have done that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's really good advice. Yeah, and the adult learning model, I mean, no, I think that's a really important one to highlight to people because that's where the ego does get in the way because it's out of the comfort zone where we start to learn.
Yes, exactly. And it is interesting about the ego that you mentioned because particularly working in mining, a lot of blokes who, especially on site, they might not have had the best experience with school and learning. So they enter a workshop, which is essentially set up like a classroom. You've got a PowerPoint, you've got tables and chairs, it's indoor, they're sitting down, they're given workbooks with lots of reading material. They can quickly start associating that with their experience at school. And then you often see, you know, the shoulders sort of, you know, their arms crossed and like, who is this person from corporate? Like, what are they going to teach me about leadership? So it's a good challenge though.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier about being reminded of some of the classroom or lecture experiences at university. And I was reminded of sitting in the back row throwing paper darts when we were really bored.
You never did that, Jürgen.
Oh, yeah, I did. That was our activity, to keep ourselves entertained. But that was in the really bad one. So there were other lectures that were very engaging where we were sitting up the front and we were entertained and we learnt. So, yeah, so there's quite a dramatic range of experiences you can have.
Yeah, it was actually funny. Last week I was running the technical trainer session for a bunch of engineers and I got them to reflect on the worst experience they've had in learning, just to have a think about that. And the majority of stories were all based on one of those university lectures. So maybe need a first-time university lecturer podcast out next. But
Possibly. I think it's one of those situations where people get into those positions because of their technical knowledge and technical skills, but they can't really. Often they don't have the skills to pass that know-how on in a way that actually engages their students.
Yes, and that's exactly what happens with leaders as well. I'm sure you're exposed to it too. A lot of these technically brilliant people promoted to leadership positions and not recognizing they need to let go of the technical and start building those soft skills. So yes, it's parallels to the university lecturer side of things as well.
Yeah. All right. So what are some of the tools that you use in your facilitation to kind of make the whole experience different and make it unpredictable?
I might throw a sample of some things that I've done or, it's really about, and I love that your podcast has got a bit of innovation in the title because one of my Clifton Strengths, have you done the Clifton Strengths assessment at all?
No, I don't know that one.
Oh, cool. Or maybe we'll link to it in the show notes. My number one strength is ideation, and that's really about linking in things that are sort of random together, and it just makes sense. So I guess the things that I do range from the technology that I use. Last week, this was a train the trainer, but it was delivered for 13 people in Brisbane and had an audience in Hong Kong and in Sydney as well. So the whole thing about when you deliver a train the trainer is that you've got a model being a great trainer, which is the whole irony, but it forces you to step up. And I was thinking, how do I make this thing? Teleconferences, video conferencing is difficult. It's very difficult to be engaging. There's a really great app called Nearpod, N-E-A-R-P-O-D. Now, this app is actually marketed to high school teachers, but if you've got a class size of up to 40 people, it's free. Basically, you can upload your presentation to it. You can add all these different features like polling, word clouds, quizzes. You can get them to draw on virtual post-it notes, collaborate in real time. And that was a hit. So something very simple that was a free tool. And thank goodness I brought that in. And the feedback following that was, look, we've never had a video conference that has been interactive. For 3.5 hours, we had people participating still through that technology. So that was good. Another example of something random that I did was I was working for, we had a strategy group for this global company, and we're doing a team session for them. It's basically using the team management system report, debriefing their results. And I said to the person I was delivering with, look, they're expecting us to go in to talk about the report, to give them their report, to debrief, and that's what they're expecting, is what I would expect. So we've got to do something different. So we started profiling the audience, which is what I always recommend when you're running a workshop, is think of the learner. And the demographic of the learners were, 40 to 50 year old, majority male in the room. And I thought, okay, what do they all have in common? And I think the new Star Wars movie was out at the time. So we thought, Star Wars, that's everyone loves in that sort of age group, loves Star Wars. So what we did was I got online and we created the opening of this workshop. It was like the opening of a Star Wars movie. So we had the music, mm-hmm. But it was like, what you're going to do today is go through a mission. So we're giving them the mission in terms of what they do in the start of Star Wars. We put it into the video, and that was unpredictable. It didn't take much time, but it had amazing results. And the whole sort of theme of the presentation was around Star Wars. And some of these things, you can talk about it and people think, oh, that's going to be cheesy. But then you actually do it and people are sort of craving this whole human connection and humor, and it's fresh and it's different. They'd rather that than something that's very stale using the PowerPoint template you've been given. So, those are a couple of examples of things that I do. As much as in terms of my design of workshops, I think every sort of between 8 to 10 minutes, I like to mix up the activity, the mode of delivery, whether it's I'm explaining something, then we get people standing up, finding a partner, talking about it, then they sit down, then they write something, then it's a video. So it's constantly mixing it up because, we do have fairly short attention spans. So those are a few things.
Yeah, I really like the activity and the theme around the whole workshop idea. That's something that can then be a trigger later on because people will certainly remember that part of it.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because even like a year later, they were still talking about the Star Wars video. nice little hook.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you brought up an example that also involved some remote training, because I was going to ask you about the challenges of doing something remotely as opposed to having people in the same room. So you've kind of talked a little bit about it there.
Mm. Well, there's another thing. I also ran a workshop with a team because I worked for this global company. So a lot of managers were struggling on how to manage people in geographically remote sites. And I know you've managed teams across the world as well. And I guess there's sort of a myth that we've got to treat them differently to people that are in our own offices. And I think it's not about treating them differently. It's about treating them the same, but you do have to make the extra effort. So instead of a phone call, could you hop onto a Skype call and do video? If you're having a planning session, something that connects all of us is our love of food. So, what I even suggested, we had teams in Indonesia. So it's like sending them like a a packet of Tim Tams. They open it while they're in the meeting and we eat some Indonesian food in Australia. So it's just, how do we start connecting with people? It is just extra effort and thinking ahead. That's the challenge, because we don't have enough, or we don't prioritize it because we are so busy sort of with information overload. But it's just sort of making the extra effort, being extra thoughtful, but treating them the same as you treat sort of any other one of your employees.
Mm. Yeah, I like the idea. I mean, they're just little things, aren't they? But it's building that human connection, and it doesn't just apply to facilitating a workshop. I mean, it's, I think that's kind of any human interaction, those things are important, and people tend to forget about those things when suddenly technology becomes involved, or they're online, or they're remote from the other person, and they say, well, it's easy to jump on Skype and talk to them, but that human connection, there's still the same fundamentals involved, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And a lot of people think, yeah, technology will save the day, but it's how you're using the technology to connect better is what you really need to figure out. Will this enable a better connection with that person? You still need to put an effort. You can't, yeah, unfortunately, AI and, you know, isn't that advanced yet.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day, and we were talking about podcast editing, and they said, is there an AI that can automatically edit out the ums and ahs and when I stutter and so on? And I said, well, it'd be nice if there was something like that, but I think the thing to do is actually work on yourself.
Yeah.
Work on the thoughts, which is the human part of it.
When I first started I'm about 65 episodes in at this time of recording, but I remember when I first started my podcast and I was trying to edit out my ums and ahs, and it just became too much. And I thought, look, Leanne, the best way around this is to, like you said, just stop saying the ums and the ahs and just get better. So that's been a really great skill to pick up. It's funny though, with the wavelengths, you can actually see what an arm looks like when you're editing in terms of the wave. Mm.
Mm. Yes, I've learned what they look like. I've learned what so looks like as well, because that's one of my favourite filler words. So
And you build up great awareness from the interview process.
Exactly. All right, you talked a little bit about a couple of stories there and linking in themes into your workshops to help the facilitation. How do you work with stories to use them as metaphors for teaching?
That's really good. I think stories are extremely powerful and often underutilized, especially from what I've noticed in my experience in organizations. And the best and most compelling facilitators, speakers are ones that can tell stories really well. I think I'm not going to say it from a facilitator perspective. I think we know it's important in terms of, like, let's just say you've got a model to explain a story of how you've used it, what went well, as an example. But the more powerful side of facilitation, I think, is actually listening to the stories of the participants in the room and giving them the opportunity to share their stories. You talked about adult learning theory a bit earlier on, and we have a ton of experience, all the participants in that room collectively. There's a real opportunity. There's the value of actually bringing everyone together, is we can actually learn lessons off other people. What I've noticed as well, running workshops in all these different countries for the same company, was by listening to the stories, was actually how much we had in common. And we talk about all these big culture differences between countries, which is true. But the challenges that people face in certain roles are exactly the same, whether they're in a site in the Bowen Basin versus underground in Mongolia. And I only discovered that through the use of stories. So I'm actually reading a book at the moment. It's called The Story Cookbook. It was written by, it's basically 80 activities that you can use in workshops to elicit stories from your group. And that's really powerful but you've also got to be, as a facilitator, think, you could spend all day gathering these stories. Your role as a facilitator is using what you're hearing from the group and then linking that back to the content and outcome that you want to drive. So there's a skill in the facilitator, is figuring out, that's a great story. How is that linking into what I want to move on to? and constantly segueing the stories to keep your workshop moving along.
Mm. Yeah, I imagine that the talent, well, I was going to ask, how do you elicit those stories from participants? How do you get them to participate? And I'll still ask that question, but I guess following on from your point, then the talent then is to be really clear about the outcome and kind of direct the story towards the outcome you're looking to achieve in the workshop or in that particular session.
Yes. So I'll give you some examples from this book. So the one activity that you can do even as an opener to a workshop is even talking about your name. So it's just called the name activity. So it's like, talk about, you know, introduce yourself to your group. You might be with, say, five or six other people standing in a circle, sitting in a circle. Talk to us about your name. Where did it either originate from? Why were you given that name? What does your name mean to you? Do you like your name? Do you hate it? And it's really interesting because you go around the circle, one simple activity talking about your name can reveal so much about what you value, a bit about your past, where you're from. That's one little way of gathering a story. I like this one. It's called the SIFT exercise. So SIFT is an acronym for stuff ups, insights, firsts, and transformations. So if you were in a planning day with a team, you could say, right, let's look back on the last 90 days and let's sift through some of these stories. Share either what was a stuff up for you, what was an insight you picked up, what was a first, or how were you transformed? So I guess what you're noticing from my way of eliciting stories is it's basically using questions, but using them in sort of like a processed way. So it's using questions, but giving it a bit of context and a bit of structure to elicit their stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the analogy there in terms of the SIFT in particular, but those activities to get people talking and give you some insights into what their approach is and their beliefs as well, which is I'm imagining that then gives you a really good platform or link to connect it up to the outcome of the workshop that you're aiming for.
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing. You could sort of get a debrief from three or four people around the room collectively, and you don't need to sort of respond to each one, but it's like, say the third person said something that's related to the next topic, then you use that to sort of segue into where you want to drive it. The art of segueing, I think, is extremely important in facilitation. I think that was probably the toughest part for me was, and also as an interviewer on a podcast, is how do I move from this topic to this topic? And it's actually really helpful if someone says something that sparks something that can link into the next one. It makes your life a lot easier.
Yes, that's always a challenge on the interview, but with an interview, at least you've got a conversation going two ways. So there's, at least in my view, there's plenty of opportunities to segue because the other person will say something and bring up a topic and maybe tell a story that raises other questions, whereas in a workshop the challenge is to make sure you've actually got that two-way interaction happening.
Yeah, and you're right, and sometimes you've got to develop that safe space where people do feel that it's okay, like he's talked about ego before, that they can let their ego down and talk about, especially when you talk about stuff ups. I mean, it sounds funny, but we don't often really admit our stuff ups when we work. We always celebrate, you know, how great we've gone and we've hit this target. But, you know, when we stuff up, we're pretty quiet about it.
Yeah, and the danger, I mean, I remember back to my corporate days, the danger when you open up the floor for that kind of activity is, well, so-and-so stuffed that up. So they don't talk about, you don't talk about your own stuff ups, you talk about somebody else's. And that can very quickly deteriorate into something that you certainly don't want in your workshop.
Yes, it can definitely, those derailers, that's another fascinating topic, the whole behavior management thing. And that's what I love about facilitation though. It is unpredictable. That's why I think at the end of the day as well, it's actually quite exhausting because you're not only there just giving a speech, you're actually having to really listen in to what is going on in the room. What is the energy? There's, you know, Bob might be playing up. How do I deal with that? even during the breaks, you're constantly thinking ahead. At the end of every single facilitation day, I'm pretty knackered. How about you?
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, how do you manage your own energy through that? And in particular, because one of the questions I wanted to ask was, what's the difference with a shorter workshop versus, a one-day workshop versus something that might go over many days, even up to a week? So we've got I'm not doing it on my own. I've got three other people co-presenting and co-running this, but we've got a one-week, six-day event coming up in Fiji, and it's overseas, so we're not in our home environment as well. So how do you deal with managing your energy through that and then, you know, recovering your energy, say, at the end of the day for fronting up again the next day?
That's such a great question. It's very relevant. I'm about to do some gigs in Hong Kong, which is over 2 weeks, and it's 5 days, you know, 9 to 5, and then the following week 9 to 5, and that's just me. And unfortunately, it isn't Fiji. Otherwise, I'd be on the beach in the afternoons going for a run. I think it comes down to preparation. So especially when you're traveling, I think you want to take out your brain. Really doesn't want to make many decisions when you're doing this. So you want to lessen the load on your brain. So it's thinking about what outfits am I going to wear, making sure that you know the content, you've got all your resources packed for each session, making sure you know what you're eating for lunch. And some other advice I was given, which you might like as well, is say, you know, if you're running a Monday to Friday workshop, on the Wednesday evening, book in a massage or something just to unwind. I'm all really about the morning routine. I have been for a few years, and I always start my day by going for a 5 kilometer run and, you know, listening to podcasts or some music. I don't need music that gets me excited, because I'm naturally an excited person. I need more sort of slow paced kind of stuff to sort of calm me down a bit. Actually, some great advice given to me the other day from a guest on my show was that an hour before her workshop, she switches her phone into flight mode. So she's at the workshop, she's checked in with the client, and she puts her phone into flight mode. And she does that just in case, sort of, you know, sometimes when you check your emails and something comes through and you're like, oh, I do have to deal with that. Or it might just put you in a bad state and puts you off focus. So I actually started doing that this morning. I switched it onto flight mode before I started the workshop, which was great. I talked about morning routines, but something now that I'm really more aware of is the evening routine, which is even more important. So that's probably like an hour or two before. I drink magnesium powder, which really helps me. I make sure that the phone device has gone into night mode, so the blue light is off. And then half an hour before, I put the phone away, set my alarm, and just read a book. Not a book about anything too exciting, but something that's pretty brain numbing. And just getting that sleep is so important. I do find it difficult. I'm still in stages of being able to switch off, because I'm constantly thinking about what will I do tomorrow. So I've been advised that meditation is the way to go. It's a practice I need to start though. Yeah, I'd love to hear what you do actually. How do you sort of unwind after a big day?
Yeah, I tend to do some of those things. I'm fascinated by the magnesium suggestion. I might have to do that. I do switch off and do something totally different. Well, usually if I'm traveling on my own, I'll phone family, and that's kind of the switch over to personal time. And then often it'll either be reading, or sometimes I'll watch some TV, but some, you know, mind-numbing stuff, as you say.
Yeah. So basically
turn the brain off and then try to get really good sleep. And I usually start with a morning bike ride, or usually if I'm traveling, it's in the gym. Places like Fiji, I will go for a cool down walk on the beach, and then usually I start off by doing a live video of the event, which is part of our marketing exercise. But that kind of gets me in the mood of, okay, it's a workshop time starting now, and then I'll have a look at what's coming on for the day and get prepared for that.
Oh, awesome! So do you live video on Instagram?
I have been doing it on Facebook, but this time I might explore Instagram or perhaps even LinkedIn.
Awesome. So, I will follow you. Yeah, I love doing that stuff too, just before a workshop.
Yeah. And then the other one that I found very challenging, back in my corporate days, I used to travel all around the world doing workshops. And if you travel to the other side of the world, like Europe or the USA, particularly East Coast, where there was a massive time difference, and you know, 1 or 2 days later, get into a 5-day workshop, that was a real struggle because it was really hard to sleep. And often I'd find myself, you know, falling asleep at about 8 at night, and I'd be very, very strict about protecting that evening time, saying, well, I'm going to skip dinner because I know between 8 and midnight I might sleep, but after midnight I probably won't sleep anymore, so I'll be up for half the night. So to get
that. I had the same experience. Yeah, it's awful. It's terrible. I had it in Canada as well. I think I was running off, you know, 3 hours sleep every night for the first 3 days.
Yeah. So a lot of those times it's just relying on the adrenaline. The adrenaline.
Yeah, which thankfully they'll kick in, but you don't, it's not nice feeling that way. And you feel like a bit of a fog. Well, that's how I felt.
In some ways, yeah. The good thing though is if it's a workshop like you're saying, where there's lots of activity and lots of unpredictability, then at least that keeps you on your toes. The worst situation is if it's a meeting where you're not necessarily actively presenting all the time, so you're passive at some of the times, because that's when you start to struggle with staying awake.
Yes, very good point. And yeah, that magnesium powder, a guest on my show told me about that, so I gave it a go, and it does I don't know if it's placebo or I think reading too much into it, but it is part of that wind down routine, so yeah, I'd recommend it.
Yeah, I actually take it for my exercise routine to prevent cramps, but I usually don't take it with me traveling, so I'll have to change that. So thanks for that.
No problem.
Now, your podcast, you've been running that nearly 2 years now, haven't you?
So yeah, you just over a year. Yeah, I started that. I was at I love podcasts. I love listening to them. It's the number one way that I learn. Before I was living in Brisbane in this role, I was living in Broome in Western Australia and didn't really get the chance to listen to podcasts because there's no traffic there. I'd get to work in 5 minutes. But when I moved back to Brisbane, I was spending a good 40 minutes stuck in traffic. And I thought, because I'm really about not wasting time, I thought, how can I make this commute more effective? So podcasting was the way to go. Went to a conference in Brisbane called We Are Podcast. Because one of my favorite podcasters, Jordan Harbinger, was there. That's actually how I met Sean D'Souza, was through that conference. Mm-hmm. They had this competition. It was, you win this book, just enter your podcast name and you can win. And I didn't have a podcast, but I wanted to win the book. So I just invented First Time Facilitator because they say that if you want to start a podcast, you should do it about something that you want to learn more about.
Yeah.
And I wanted to become a better facilitator. So that's how it all started. And yeah, it's over... Yeah, about 65 episodes. I interview mainly facilitators, but also I interviewed Julian Treasure. He actually gave a TED speech called How to Speak So People Want to Listen. It's, I think, one of the top 10 most downloaded TED videos. It's my favorite TED video. And the podcast gave me a great opportunity to talk to him. I just love it because every single episode I'm talking to facilitators that just teach me something new, something I haven't thought about. And it's all very actionable and stuff that I can just start practicing immediately. So it's probably the best way for me to learn is just by interviewing and getting the excuse to chat to all these amazing people.
Yeah, that's what I love about the podcast, getting to chat to all these amazing people, learning from them and meeting new people as well. I find that sending a cold email to somebody saying, I've got this podcast, I'd like to get you on to the podcast to talk about, and you have to do a little bit of research up front to find out about the person and whether they're a good match, but then also to make it clear to them what value they would bring to your podcast. So then it's highly likely that people will say yes.
Yes, as opposed to sort of just reaching out and go, I really admire you, let's go for a coffee. People are too busy for that.
Pick your brain, yeah.
yeah, but if you put them on a podcast, they'll be like, yeah, I'd love to share that with you. So anyone listening that is sort of second guessing starting a podcast, that's it's just been amazing. That's the whole reason why I've been able to leave my job, is because I've built up a great audience. It's created a lot of partnerships and collaborations with facilitators. It's just positioned it beautifully.
Hmm. Now, you mix up your podcast, probably 80% of them are interview, but then you've got solo podcasts in the middle as well. So how do you go about the solo podcasts? Because I find that quite challenging to do them solo when I don't have a conversation partner and I've got to kind of imagine my audience there that I'm trying to engage, but they're not actually there for me to see.
Yes. Well, I remember my first solo episode, I had an idea of in my head of what I wanted to talk about. I hit the record button and that took forever because I kept, like you said, it's really difficult having a conversation with yourself, especially without structure. And it was just an awful experience. So it was a good, okay episode. Got some good feedback, surprisingly, but it took a lot of energy to do that. And then I was talking to Sean D'Souza. I went to his workshop in Singapore and I said, how do you do your solo episodes? Like, what's your trick? And he introduced me to an app called Prompt Smart Pro. And I didn't realize that he scripts all of his episodes. And I was like, really? You script them? Like, doesn't it sound unnatural? And he goes, no. If you script them, then put them into this app that acts like a teleprompter, it's actually much easier to deliver. Because I was actually sort of scripting a few ideas in Word, but it sounded like I was reading it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into the app, scripted my ideas, wrote very informally because you don't really talk the way that you should write. And every time I'm sort of inspired by a concept, I'll challenge myself to do a solo episode. But like you, it's actually more difficult doing solo than interview. And you think it'd be easier doing solo because it's just you and, you're there. But I like having, my latest solo episodes were called The 12 Rules for Facilitation. And that's because I saw Dr. Jordan Peterson speak in Brisbane recently. I've read his book, 12 Rules for Life. And I thought, look, why can't we have a version for facilitation? So the good thing about that, was that it gave a bit of structure around the way that I wrote that solo episode. So it's about sort of seeking out structure. It's talking about topics that I either rant about or very passionate about, and then putting all that info in Prompt Smart and hitting the record button. Much easier now.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because I've got another prompt tool for the mobile phone, which I started using. But again, I just wondered if it's too much like reading. And even when I scripted the things, even when I bullet pointed things, it was still like reading because I was thinking, well, how do I say this? And it was not like I would normally speak. So
yes,
something that I continue to work on. So I'm going through a challenge right now of doing a daily video on just one sentence and trying to present that sentence in different ways. And I'm noticing that's actually giving me the ability to kind of sense a lot more how I'm being on camera and engaging with the lens as if there was somebody actually there that I'm talking to, and using that to become more comfortable in doing that. And that's going to be helpful for a solo podcast.
Yes, it definitely will. It's funny, we're living these parallel lives at the moment because I'm also doing a video challenge every day on Instagram. And I was talking to, have you heard of Pat Flynn? He runs Smart Passive Income podcast.
Yeah.
So I was at a speaker's retreat with him down the Gold Coast and I was asking him about his videos. And he said, this is really interesting because I go on my videos, I'm like, hi everyone. And on my podcast, hey everyone. He goes, you're not talking to everyone, you're talking to one person. So he's like, that's why he says, hey you, thank you for your support. He doesn't say thanks everyone.
I noticed that on your latest solo podcast. I was listening to that because I heard, Eric K. Johnson, the podcast talent coach. I had him on the podcast a little while ago and I listened to one of his podcasts just recently and he was saying exactly the same thing. He said, you're talking to one person. You've got to make it really personal. His philosophy is that podcasting is such an intimate medium because basically you're in the ear of your listener, and people listen to podcasts because they want company. And so you've got to establish that connection, which is one-on-one. So I have to look at mine. I don't use a lot of plural words, but I do sometimes refer to listeners. So if you're listening to this right now, I hope you're enjoying it.
Yeah. If you're listening to it, make sure that you follow Jürgen and giving him some feedback on his Facebook Lives.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, this is really fascinating, Leanne. I could keep talking for ages about workshops and podcasts, but I think bearing in mind the time, it's time to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round designed to help the listener to do something awesome and learn from your experience and tips from what you've done and what you've learned. So I've got five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today. Number one, what's the number one thing you think people need to do to be more innovative?
I think innovation and ideas are all around us, but it's really about in everyday situations, like stepping back and thinking, this is interesting. How could I apply this to XYZ? So as an example, I watch Game of Thrones and I watch a scene and I think, how could I use that clip in my topic about giving feedback? So it's constantly like observing what's going on around you and thinking, how does this link into what I'm doing in my work? That's my advice, is to step back.
That's really good advice, and it's something that I try to do a lot and always admire people that do it really well, because I'm not sure I'm that good at it.
Yeah, right, it's sort of just reminding yourself. So, yeah, I'm glad that that you found that one useful.
What's the number one what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I think the best thing, I mean, that's the thing. I have a ton of ideas. I love just getting ideas. But the best thing that I have done to develop new ones is actually just helping other people develop their own. So I guess the reason why I've really focused on facilitation and creating unpredictable moments is because a lot of people come to me and go, how can I make my workshop or conference more engaging, et cetera? And it's kind of like I run this workshop first aid where I could tell them what to do, but I just ask them questions and I ask the right questions so that they walk away thinking they've got something amazing. I haven't told them what to do though. I've just used the questions to get the best out of them. So I think the best thing that I can do is people come to me seeking a solution. They've already got an idea of what they want. It's just really formulating it and seeing how it will work through a coaching conversation like that. Probably I love doing the workshop first aid for people, but yeah, the whole miracle of that is that they're so grateful, but I haven't really done much at all.
Yeah.
So, asking questions. Yeah. I feel great. Win-win.
I've just spent my audiobook credit this month on, I think it's called Questions Are the Answer or something like that by Hal Gregerson. I've had my eye on that book for a while, and I think that might be along those lines of, you know, how to use questions to help people and ask the questions in a way that you actually get a conversation going. So I'm looking
forward to it. And you've read the Coaching Habit as well by that second question's quite good. And what else? I love that one.
That's right. All right. What's one of the reasons you've mentioned many resources already, but what's one that you use most often?
Yeah. Okay. So you're asking for a favorite tool or system. I'm going to take system a bit general. I'm going to say that the biggest thing for me for innovation in terms of my system is my morning routine. Like the best ideas I get are always when I'm out running. I actually have to stop sometimes and get my phone out and write into notes what I'm thinking. And in terms of improving productivity, the other thing that I do, and this is really traditional, but again, it's like when I'm driving, I do get great ideas as well. So you can't get on your phone while you're driving. I have a notepad and a pen in my glove box, and I just write into that because it's great to have information, but you've got to store them somewhere. And you can always come back to them later once they're in that notepad. But I'm not breaking the law, but I'm capturing the ideas.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the things I find frustrating about podcasts is driving in the car, because I listen to them in the car all the time and comes up with an idea when I'm on the freeway at 100 kilometers an hour. Oh, damn, I have to remember that. How am I going to remember that? But I have also, I go for a morning bike ride every day, and particularly if I'm solo, I come up with great ideas, and I have been known to recite about 7 or 8 ideas for an hour until I come back and I've got something where I can actually write them down or remember them.
Yeah, it's like when you wake up from a dream. Like sometimes I dream about solutions and I think I need to write this down. That's great. To know that you can sleep and then come up with an answer is such a cool thing.
Mm. Yeah, I guess it's all the same thing, isn't it? It's kind of allowing the mind to kind of shut off from the normal day-to-day routine stuff, and it'll come up with ideas from the unconscious.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. What's the best way you know to keep a project on track?
Yeah, so I use Asana. I only use it for my, as a solopreneur, it's just me at the moment, but I use it for myself because it emails me reminders. I just like the process. If I've got a project coming up and it could be course development, it could be needing to check in with a client at a certain time, sending through a quote invoices, that whole process, I've created like a template for it that I can copy over, assign new deadlines. And it's just nice to know that I will get an email reminder and I don't need to have that stored in my head to remember. There's nothing worse than you think, oh, I forgot to remind them about this, about X, Y, and Z. I find that it's just, you can trust the system to remind you to do it, which allows my brain to do other things.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that's, Asana really is a wonderful tool. I mean, there's lots of things we find frustrating with it, but it really is a very powerful project management tool. And like you say, it allows you to kind of put things out of your brain. I think just before I got on the podcast, I put some post-it notes in there that were cluttering up my desk, and I thought, time to get rid of those.
Nice. You used your time well.
Yeah. All right. What's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think it's to sort of reflect back on your experiences and not take them for granted. So like, even when I was explaining my story to you about where I got to where I am now, and I was really having to think about, yeah, I remember that when I was 5 years old, that birthday party, something stood out about the lack of organization and engagement. And you think, That's a unique story to me, but also the experience of the communities I've been involved with in terms of sport, the books that I've read, the people I've hung out with, is actually sort of getting that all down on paper, just writing out what has happened in your history that's kind of interesting. Well, it may not be interesting to you because it's been your life, but if you sort of bring those pieces together, that's what creates the uniqueness. So I think it's about capturing that and then using that to tell a story in the way that you market your services, how that can build your credibility because of all that experience.
Okay. Yeah, that's really good advice, and sort of being self-aware, but also reflecting on some of the things that you may take for granted and may not think are of interest to other people.
That's right. Yeah, because we do devalue the stuff in our own head because it's in our own head.
All right. Well, thanks, Leanne. This has been really fascinating. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about you and your services, and also say hello and thank you for what you've shared today?
Yeah, I'd love to connect with you if you're listening. So I'm on LinkedIn, Leanne Hughes. I've also got my podcast, which is at firsttimefacilitator.com or your favorite podcast player. And then you can see more about what I offer in terms of services on my website, which is leannehughes.com. But my favorite social platform at the moment, yeah, I should say LinkedIn, but it isn't. It's Instagram. I love Instagram, and I'm on there at Leanne Hughes.
All right. We'll have links to all of those in the show notes so people can just click through as well. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation?
Wow. I think is to encourage a facilitative conversation with everyone in your team and organization. I think where I see innovation fail is where people finally get the courage to speak up and ask that question, you know, what if we did this, or what if we adjusted this? And it's not met in a receptive way. So the leader or someone in the team is shutting down that comment. That is the biggest inhibitor of innovation, from my experience, from what I've seen. A lot of the best innovations come from the ground up. So I think it's creating an environment and a culture where it's okay to start questioning things, that's the best way to drive innovation is to create an environment where it's okay to speak up.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really great advice, and we could probably have a whole episode on how you go about doing that, because it's one or two sentences, but a rather complex topic in and of itself, isn't
Very
it?
Very complex. Culture, anything related to culture is extremely complex, yeah.
Yeah.
And long-term.
All right. Well, finally then, Leanne, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I work, well, through my old job, I've seen these, the guys from the Cortex group, so Dr. Annette Coy and Cameron Fee, they're doing some amazing sort of cutting edge stuff in the world of innovation and when it relates to safety in complex organizations. So I would definitely recommend them. Cameron is a hilarious facilitator and excellent storyteller. Annette is really smart about the workshop design and the way that they sort of lead innovation and safety projects in complex companies. So I'd definitely recommend them. They'd have a ton of info and they're just wonderful people to talk to.
All right. Well, we might get an introduction from you to Annette and Cameron and reach out to them to get them on the podcast. Thanks for that.
No problem.
And thanks so much for sharing your insights and your thoughts with us so generously today. I've had a ball talking to you about all things facilitation and workshops and picked up lots of tips and ideas and also about podcasting, of course. So I've really enjoyed it and I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Absolutely, Jürgen. And thank you so much for your show and what you do for listeners and bringing sort of the diverse range of guests on your show, and all the best for your solo episodes.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that delightfully engaging and insightful conversation with Leanne and took something away from what she shared. I particularly liked her point about reflecting back on my experiences and not taking them for granted, no matter how mundane I might think others will find them. Of course, she had so many great tips about facilitating meetings and workshops too, and I've got a whole page of notes of things that I'm going to work on in my next workshops. I'd love to know what you took away from Leanne's interview. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Leanne Hughes. That is LeanneHughes. All lowercase or one word, innovabiz.co/Leanne Hughes. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Leanne there, as well as links to her website, the First Time Facilitator podcast, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation. Leanne suggested we interview Dr. Annette Coy and Cameron Fee of the Cortex Group on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Annette and Cameron, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Leanne Hughes. Finally, I'd like to give a shout out to Erica Kastner, the Queen of Results from the USA, for her review of the InnovaBuzz podcast. She says, "Jürgen is a wonderful host. He has a keen ability to challenge his guests to dive deeper with their answers. This gives the listener more meaningful insight and practical takeaways that can be applied to their unique situation as soon as they finish listening to the episode. I also appreciate the diversity of guests on the podcast." Thanks very much for that feedback, Erica, and for leaving the review. And I'm really glad that you have that view of the podcast, because that's exactly what we aim to do. So thank you again. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information that'll help you transform your marketing. Also, check out our Tales of Marketing Transformation show, which you'll find at talesofmarketingtransformation.com. There, each episode will provide you one valuable message to guide you on your journey of marketing transformation. And of course, tune in again next week to the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Deb Farnworth-Wood, the founder of Australian Skin Clinics, and Peter Cook, the CEO of Thought Leaders. Stay connected. Subscribe to the Innova Buzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.